Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Marianne Yeager, Chief Executive of the Sequoia Project. Welcome, Marianne.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on today. So would you be able to give everyone a little bit, I guess, deeper of an introduction as to who you are and what you do?
Sure. So at the Sequoia Project, we're a nonprofit with a public mission. We're really solely focused on advancing interoperable health data sharing, and we do so by supporting a couple initiatives, one of which is the eHealth Exchange, which started as an ONC program initiative back in 2008 and was incubated as a way for the private sector and government agencies to share health information with each other securely over the internet. And it really became our initiative to support ongoing as a private-led effort and still in the spirit of public-private and the public good. Back in 2012, and now it's a pretty substantial health data sharing network. About 65% of all U.S. hospitals are able to share records, and 50,000 medical groups for 100 million patients, and with four federal agencies involved as well, the Veterans Health Administration, Department of Defense, Social Security Administration, and CMS. And over time, our scope of our work expanded, and we supported a new initiative called Care Equality, which is really about enabling different data sharing networks to share records under a common agreement. So it's kind of like what telecom did years ago, and where a healthcare provider nowadays may be part of one data sharing network, and Care Equality allows those providers in different networks to trust each other. So kind of like telecom, you can use your cell phone and call folks anywhere regardless of the plan that they support. So that's really gives you a sense of the type of work we do here.
Right. So the focus on interoperability is obviously very timely given a lot of the general discussion about it. So in thinking about that discussion about interoperability, what are your impressions in terms of what the high-level dialogue is getting right and what is it getting wrong?
Well, I mean, there is a lot of dialogue around the challenges, and there are a lot of practical challenges around interoperability. We live and breathe it day in and day out, and so I think that there's a common recognition, and there's more, I think, overall, there's greater visibility and understanding of the types of things that are impeding progress. But I think that sometimes because health record sharing isn't ubiquitous. It isn't available in every single care setting and every place where we as patients receive care. Sometimes there's a perception that it's just not happening. And I think that that's really where it's not exactly right. There is interoperable data sharing on a large scale, but and when it occurs in pockets or it is really available or largely utilized by, you know, health systems, for instance, I think there's a misperception or misconception that it just isn't working on, and actually it is. And we're starting to see some really encouraging promise as these capabilities mature and expand and more different types of providers have those capabilities available to them. So I think that we're definitely heading in the right direction, and so we'll start seeing some real evidence of that here in the next year or so.
What do you anticipate will be some of that evidence that you just referenced that we'll be seeing?
Well, I think it's really proof is in the numbers. So we talk about the statistics to the initiatives that we support, and colleagues at Direct Trust talk about theirs as well as a way to give a metric of the type of connectivity and level of connectivity. I think what's going to be demonstrable progress is when there is more density in the type of connectivity and the availability of health information in particular geography. So here in Northern Virginia, D.C. metropolitan area, most large health systems have the ability to share records. Are they able to reach, and is every small clinic in this area have the same capability? Well, yes, it's available in their EHR or through their HIE network. But I think the proof will be when we see that more density, more ubiquity of that data sharing, and it becomes more visible to us as patients, too, in everyday life. And I see we see instances of it, but it's got to be commonplace in every day and every time for it, I think, for the community and the public to believe that it's really real.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I think kind of as you're describing, you just want to, it just needs to happen without having to think about it and without questioning if it's going to be able to occur.
Exactly, exactly. We spend a lot of time talking about the mechanics and the engineering of health data sharing, even with policymakers. And I think in the very near future, that's just going to sort of be something that exists. It's the plumbing that is just the underpinning of that allows all this to occur. We won't be spending so much time in the weeds and the engineering part of it, but more on, you know, the user experience, the clinician experience, the qualities, and the value of the data itself. So I think that will be another marker of success.
Yes. No, I think, as you said, if we can get, the plumbing correct, then it's, you can actually start focusing on the right issues, or maybe not the right issues, but the more visible issues. So in terms of kind of thinking about the background technical side of things, where do you see the biggest challenges still are there? What needs focus and continued work?
Well, right now, I wouldn't call it a challenge, but I just think it's a marker of progress that we're starting to see the ability to request and receive clinical documents becoming far more commonplace and ubiquitous. And so we're just in the rollout stages there. And so the challenges are really one of practical rollout. It's all about IT deployment, right? You know, you start in stages and roll it out. So that's not so much a challenge. I think the challenges are probably principally around identity. The patient matching continues be one that requires some attention, and then secondly, the quality of and completeness of the data that's available. So oftentimes we hear from clinicians that, you know, the documents they receive are either too much information and it's overwhelming, and that they have to cull through pages and pages of documents to get the data they need, or it's simply sparse and it's not enough. And those are really the two big ones. And they're all, these issues are solvable by really bringing the community of public-private stakeholders together, rolling up our sleeves and getting really practical and focused. But those are two focus areas that we're certainly spending our energy on this year.
And when you talk about the quality of the data and trying to fill in the gaps, would it be helpful if there were standards in place in terms of what needs to be present?
Well, you know, the standards we have are really good building blocks. What we need is more specificity and what we say constraining to remove the variability in how those documents are supported, so there's more consistency across the board. It's just the fact that a lot of the details and the use and implementation of the standards really left to the discretion of the implementation community, which certainly makes for a very robust standard and lots of flexibility. But to really get to that greater clinical value to the data, and again, so a clinician knows and can expect to receive a certain amount of data, that really is about getting consensus on, you know, how and where the data are put, so there's consistency across the board, and there's certainly more work we can do there. But it's more implementation, it would augment standards, but not really necessarily starting anew with a completely different set of standards.
Right. Yeah, no, I think trying to start anew would definitely present a different set of challenges. So, but I guess when you're talking about, you know, be able to have the data that the different clinicians expect, but at the same time recognizing that the implementers are going to have different customizations, are those kind of two opposing forces that it can't meet, or do you think it will be possible to get to a happy kind of, I think as you said, consensus point?
I think definitely a happy medium. I think there's sort of the baseline, a basic set of functions in a clinical document that will be valuable, and there's lots of room to innovate and all the very sophisticated capabilities that our health IT systems support out there in the market. So I think they're certainly not mutually exclusive, but I think those getting beyond the basic data sharing and having that reliable quality document will make the really the value is in the data itself and what you can do with the data, and that's really where innovation will occur.
Right. And in terms of when you're talking about data sharing, kind of what does that look like? Because, you know, what I hear sometimes and oftentimes I hear from my wife who's a physician is, you know, you get data in or documents and it's just a PDF or a scan of a document, and it's great, you get that information, but you can't do anything easily with it. So I'm hoping I'm not making a bad assumption, but when you're talking about data sharing, it sounds like actually actionable data, so it's not just kind of baked into a single file, but something that comes in and you can integrate it and manipulate it within your health IT system where you're receiving it.
That's exactly right, but there's really no perfect world. I mean, right now we need to get the information that's available, whether it's scanned or PDF, because remember, as an industry, we went from being really paper-based in 2008 to being largely digitalized here in 2017, and it's really not that much time, if you think about it, for those systems to be widely deployed and used, and, you know, years and years of data and historical data aren't going to be in a computable format. But what we're talking about is definitely computable data, discrete data that are packaged and sent and transmitted so that the receiving system can take them and integrate them and apply decision rules and all kinds of things around analytics. And so that's really what, as an industry, we've been focusing on, but it's a progression. And I think that, again, getting back to public perception is sometimes an expectation that, well, now that health IT systems are fairly ubiquitous and largely utilized, that there's going to be this perfection and this seamless data sharing out of the gate. And that's just simply not the real world. It's really about a progression and taking steps and allowing those systems to mature and the standards to mature and the implementation experiences to inform. And future updates and revisions, just that incremental progress, and we're starting to see it, so it's exciting.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very fair point, that as you said, we've come a very long way in a relatively short period of time. I think at least my impression seems to be that the demand to expect things to expect the systems to work as seamlessly as other industries is somewhat of a reflection of a general impatience with a lot of different solutions, regardless whether you're talking about healthcare or the financial industry or entertainment.
And there's a need. I mean, there's such a profound need and value for this that if that demand is there, that which is good because it's going to push us all to try to accelerate as much as we can, but it's because there's such a profound public need, and it's just so personal to all of us as individuals and our families. So I think that is also another factor.
Yes. And before we get too far along, I want to turn back to something that you mentioned in a minute ago, which was about one of the challenges being patient matching or, you know, patient identity matching. Could you kind of flesh that issue out for us a little bit?
Well, sure. So it's commonplace in healthcare organizations that when a patient is registered in an information system that they have a record that's established. And even in large institutions that there might be multiple entry points for someone to receive care, they themselves have to reconcile and manage patient identities. If I, you know, went to the doctor, they might have multiple records from Marianne Yeager. They'd have to make sure it's the same one. Sometimes merge those records so that they're sort of a master identity. The challenge that we have in interoperability in the health IT space today is trying to reconcile identities from completely different, separate, unrelated organizations who might look at identity and manage identities and very, very differently. So there are actually might have different types of data that they use to associate and make sure it's the right person. They might format the data differently. They might apply different rules that end up in errors. And so in the U.S., in the absence of having a unique patient identifier, much like in financial services, these two different information systems will take what we call identity traits, basically demographic information about the individual, compare them using a very complex, sophisticated algorithm to determine statistically the likelihood of it being the same person. Today, that process is very error-prone. It's certainly something that we can improve upon using existing technologies, but that's the essence of the challenge that we're experiencing in our industry.
Yes, no, and I think many people who probably follow the industry have heard that, you know, the patient matching is starting to get growing acceptance in terms of, okay, you know, let's put some effort behind or more public effort behind it. And I think you just said that there are technologies that already exist that could help with the issue. So I guess, what do you see as the next step in terms of trying to help resolve the issue?
Well, we focused our efforts here at Sequoias on a project that's focused on studying and then providing a resource that could improve patient matching using existing technologies. So using existing MPIs and record location services and using existing databases and algorithms. In the absence of having a unique patient identifier, we wanted to really understand the root causes of why are these match rates so poor. And so what we did, we actually did a study in conjunction with the Care Connectivity Consortium, published the results about a year or so ago, that discovered that the nature of the issues that were causing these errors were actually had nothing to do with technologies or having a special service that could correlate identities. Rather, that was understanding that these errors were occurring because there's poor quality data, or these organizations would format the fields differently. So one would use freeform address format, the other would use the U.S. Postal Service, and it would flag an error. And so we, in working with the Care Connectivity Consortium, identified the root causes of those issues, the differences in rules. So one organization, if they don't have a Social Security number, they default to all zeros. Another one doesn't do that, and that creates errors too. And we published the results in conjunction with Intermountain Healthcare. They did a case study, and they demonstrated how by focusing on policy and process and improved rules and in cleansing the data so that the quality of the data was like could match, then we were able to really publish and share those findings and demonstrate how you can take very low match results, maybe a 40% success rate, and bring it up to 95% success rate just through policy and process controls. So for us, it was important to shine a light on, if we're going to talk about patient matching and trying to make sustained progress, what can we do today that's actionable today that we could provide as an implementation resource? And so we published this draft set of rules and a maturity model really for public input. We're reconciling those public comments as we speak through a newly formed patient matching work group, and we'll publish that again to the community, the implementation community, as a resource that they can use to start making a down payment improving patient matching.
So with the resources that you're putting out there, are you seeing or starting to adopt them or adopt
they're
the suggestions?
Right now, well, they're getting careful review right now. So once the public comments are remediated and the next version of the resource, the rules, and the maturity model are published this year, we do expect that they will be widely adopted and possibly even used as enforceable rules, for instance. So we're already seeing a good deal of very strong interest in folks putting that into action, and also that using those experiences to form the feedback back to our work group.
Right. No, that sounds like a very positive development, and as I think you're optimistically saying, hopefully that we do see adoption and adherence to the suggestions. Since I think as you're saying, if we can be able to ensure from organization to organization we are talking about the right individual, that's going to go a long way towards helping coordinate care.
Absolutely, and it's a patient safety issue too, so it's pretty important. And I think from where we stand is we don't know that this is going to solve patient matching issues, but it's incremental progress. And that's really where we're trying to focus our energies is what can we do today that's actionable to make incremental progress throughout this journey.
Right. No, and that is also a very important point, which is nothing out there is going to be a cure-all solution right up front. It's, as you keep saying, incremental progress. So you just have, as long as we can keep progressing, I think that's really the key, and I think probably needs better recognition among both all sides of the industry, whether you're talking about the actual providers or patients or the IT side, is we have to keep moving forward down the path instead of standing still or going backwards.
Right, that's right.
So as we're talking about the matching, which as you said is a safety issue, and then the ability to exchange information, I think dovetailing along with that are questions about security. And obviously, I think it's pretty clear from all the headlines that healthcare is an industry under constant attack. So how do concerns about ensuring that the data remain protected, how is that incorporated into an interoperability framework?
Well, it's foundational. Without security, you're not going to get very far with instilling confidence in data sharing. So we've spent a lot of time and focus on security and looking at what are the vulnerabilities with the federated network architecture that was started by the federal government now that we support, and really being vigilant. It's about being actionable, action-oriented and vigilant. and constantly re-examining and auditing and assessing and testing and verifying. So, for instance, you know, one of the key aspects of data sharing is having, you know, encryption and which is based on PKI, and it wasn't enough to just know that the security credential was being used as a way to assure these trusted exchange partners were really vetted and appropriate partners, but also assessing what are the likely scenarios where that could be compromised, and also testing and making sure that these certificates are properly configured in their environment. And so that's really paying dividends by being proactive. It's not to say that security incidents may not occur, but it's really about having, in addition to the security controls and the, you know, encryption and the like, but also the process for incident response. And I think we've seen very clearly over the last week or two how important it is to communicate and recognize that healthcare is part of the critical infrastructure in the U.S. and that we all have an obligation to be good stewards of the systems and the data that we support and to be vigilant. And so that's really the name of the game these days.
Yes, no, I think that the word you were using, vigilant, is definitely a key there. And as you're kind of being on the front lines in terms of examining these issues, do you have any suggestions in terms of what would be a good path to follow to be able to show that you're remaining vigilant?
Well, I think just that proactive management of all aspects of security. So over time, people with certain subject matter expertise or responsibilities within a particular organization may leave, and just making sure that domain knowledge is not lost. Particularly for something like data sharing or health information exchange, which is kind of buried. You know, it's sort of something that once it's implemented and it works, that it's just something that is sort of just this turnkey thing that's running. And so for us, because health data sharing is so, sensitive information and is at risk, like most systems of compromise, it's being active and vigilant and deliberate about making sure that there's clear understanding of who's responsible for supporting health data sharing efforts in your organization, and making sure there's good documentation and cross-training. And certainly if there is turnover in an organization as folks change positions and move on, that knowledge and expertise is not lost.
Yes, no, I very much like that point of, you know, institutionalizing the knowledge and not letting it just be lost, as you were saying, if someone changes a role or leaves the organization. That's certainly a message that I talk about with clients a lot, especially when it comes to policies or procedures. It can't all just be in someone's head. It needs to actually be on paper or put down somewhere so you can carry on and maintain that knowledge if the individual who happens to have started it isn't there anymore.
That's right.
So, you know, I hate to say it, but we are already starting to get very close to the end of our time. So what I'd like to kind of do is see if you can look into a crystal ball a little bit and, you know, predict what you think interoperability and, you know, I'd probably add in patient matching will look like next year and then in the few years to follow.
Well, next year I think that we're going to start seeing far more frequent and broader range and density of data sharing across different care settings. That is imminent, and that's in process. And I think in 2018, we're going to start seeing the conversation shift from, instead of getting sites connected, that we're going to be hearing probably some pain points about the quality and completeness of the data from the clinician community. So once we create access and provide access points to that information, I think the conversation is going to shift pretty fundamentally to the data. So I think that is both encouraging, and then we're, you know, gearing up for what we can do to support that. And similarly with patient matching, I think in the next year we'll start seeing some success stories and case studies from organizations who've been able to do some turnaround and take some pretty dramatic steps for patient matching. A couple of years from now, I think that we're going to start seeing this just become part of the status quo, the standard of care. And that our attention is going to shift to, how to enable exchange of social determinants of health and greater focus on exchange and with mental health substance abuse, and maybe focusing on genomics and consumer access. So all of these things are on the horizon. They're actually, you know, great efforts in flight right now. But I think once we get this basic connectivity really more seamlessly integrated throughout our health IT ecosystem, then we're going to start looking at all the other rich ways that we can bring other types of data together.
Right, and I think that all turns back to the message that you've been very consistent about saying is we need to have the incremental progress, because as you just said, get the basic foundation in place, and then, all those eye-opening and really desired outcomes can be layered on top of it, and it's, as you said, a step-by-step process and not something that's going to happen all at once.
That's right.
Yeah, well, as I said, I think that is a very good message to be able to close out on, because it is very unbelievable that we're already out of time. It's so I'd very much like to thank you, Marianne, for being a guest on the show today.
Well, thank you so much, Matt. I enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, no, we'll have to have you back in the future to see how well we were at guessing what will be coming, and you'll be able to touch upon what the new challenges are, because certainly challenges never end once you have something in place.
That's right.
And thank you to everyone for listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.